Welcome to another episode of Real Wealth Podcast. This is Michael Proctor, and Leading Edge Financial Planning is the sponsor once again. But also today we have the President CEO, Mary Jones, with us with the Mental Health Association of South Central Kansas.
It's a mouthful. Yes.
A little bit. But if I can read it, I get through it just fine. So, because I always called it MHA.
Yeah. Then that's what we want everyone to just know, MHA.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyways, Mary has been with MHA for 29 years.
Unbelievable. I know.
It is unbelievable. So if you're listening to it, you don't probably know what I'm thinking right now, because it doesn't look like Mary could have held a job for 29 years.
Yes.
Like, it's just, you know, so she started when she was 11.
Nine. Yes.
And she's been there ever since. Mm-hmm. And now she runs the entire show. She's had the privilege of being able to develop the organization into what it is today. Mm-hmm. I'm learning more about what so here's what I started with, is I knew that they provided mental health services. They advocate for mental health. They raise awareness. And there's a whole lot that I didn't know about. And we're going to talk about that today, because if I don't know about it, and I bet there's other people out there that don't know about it. So I'd love to raise awareness around that on the podcast, but also talk through in a similar format of our other podcasts of what does living the best life possible look like with the time that we have left. And also, we're here to help people make wise financial decisions. And one of the most impactful wise financial decisions is where you invest. Mm-hmm. And it's invest in your marriage, invest in your relationships, and invest in your mental health. So welcome on, Miss Mary Jones.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And now you're running the show in some other areas as well.
Yes.
What are your other prominent titles that I cannot remember off the top of my
head? It is fine. Yeah, I do a few things in addition to working with the Mental Health Association. I'm president of the Kansas Mental Health Coalition, which is a statewide group of mental health advocates. So I'm really proud of that. I'm also chair of the Behavioral Sciences Regulatory Board, which is the group that oversees all the licensed mental health practitioners in the state.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. A little bit of, just some things on the side.
So if you're a mental health professional, you're a good person to know.
Yeah, I might know a few things.
Right. You're also a, what's called a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist.
Yes.
LCMFT.
Yes. And a licensed clinical addiction counselor.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Threw something else at you. Yeah.
All right. So you're going to just be breaking me down the whole meeting. It's going to be awesome. I don't know if you've experienced this with anybody, but just feeling like totally stripped bare in front of somebody is not in necessarily a bad way, but you're like, wow, I don't even know what to do here, because I just get the sense of like, whatever I am, I'm just being seen straight through. Because, hey, there's a lot of telling stuff that, you know, give enough data, you can read into things.
Well, I think people sometimes think that about me, that like I'm always analyzing them, or I've had people say I look right, through them. That's just blue eyes. That's all that is. I'm not really trying to analyze everyone. I just really like to see the humanness in everyone.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I'm a human.
Yes.
And you're
so
a human.
So you count. Yep. We're here.
Here we go. Let's do this. So thank you for taking time out of your busy and very important role at MHA, with other words behind it, and joining us to talk a little bit about Mental Health Association of South Central Kansas and what you guys do. So would you mind taking a moment and listing off the ways that you work in the community?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand the depth and breadth of what MHA offers. So we look at ourselves from everything from prevention services through clinical services, and we do that across the entire lifespan. So your podcast is of real interest to me, because living your best life has to do with that across your lifespan, no matter what age you are. Our prevention services really focus on children and how to see and identify mental health early. Positive or negative? How do we develop a language for emotional intelligence? How can they talk with their families and teachers? We do a lot of that work in classroom settings. Then we have our residential services. So a lot of people don't know that we're the largest housing provider for people with mental illness in the state. And that looks really different. It looks everything from crisis housing to transitional housing to permanent supportive housing. So we create housing places so that's that are affordable, that people with mental illness can enjoy and live in a really safe, affordable environment. We also have our aging services. So when, again, through the lifespan, people need to be able to live healthy, and we want to maintain people in their houses as long as they can and want to be there. So we provide volunteer services to help seniors stay in their homes. And those volunteer hours are provided by other seniors. So as people age, they can stay engaged and active by helping others who maybe can't be at the same physical health or mental health as they are. And then our clinical services, which is what people think of when they think about mental health services. They think about medication, therapy, substance treatment, and we do all of that as well.
Wow.
In addition to that, we have community-based services, so things like helping kids and adults in the community, case management and other support services. Hmm. That's quite a bit.
That is a lot. That is an amazing amount of services. How many people are over at MHA?
We're 170, so it's not a huge number. It's a big number, but it's not a huge number given all of the services that we provide to the community.
Right. Sounds like you probably still stretch very thin.
We are. We're always, I don't think workforce issues are new to anybody right now, and we're not any different than that. And if anyone's looking for a job, we'd love to talk to you. But we have a variety of ways people can plug in, and not everybody has to be a therapist to work there. There's all ranges of employees that we have.
Wow. So you got 170, you're providing all these services to the community. How are you guys funded?
We have a really complex and different funding. So some of our services are what we call fee-for-service, so Medicaid or other insurance services. We also have grant funding and foundation funding, and a lot of that also is then donations and private contributions. We rely heavily on the fact that we the charitable nature of people in our community.
Right. So you got your gala coming up.
Yes.
And it's sold out.
It is sold out. Yeah. Okay, yeah. No, it's sold out.
Let
it's
me back
sold
that
out.
Up. It is. This is an evergreen podcast. I'm sure someone's going to listen to it when it's not sold out. So it might not, go buy a ticket.
Right. Go buy a ticket. Yeah. Go buy a ticket. We would love to have you there. It's a great event. And we've got Charlie Moon as our auctioneer. And we do some amazing offerings in that. But more importantly, there's a central focus on how everybody can impact the mental health of themselves and the community.
Mm-hmm. And what are the other... So we were driving in this morning. Mm-hmm. I was driving my kids to the Y.
Yeah.
They do the Camp Hyde deal, which is really cool.
Which is a great place.
I did not have that experience as a kid. Mm-hmm. But they're out on an adventure every day of the week. Yeah. It's amazing. And we're downtown, and there's this guy. And mm-hmm. he's on the street corner, and he's having a conversation.
Yeah.
Of an emotional conversation with nobody. Mm-hmm. And Ellie's like, who's he talking to?
Yeah.
Ellie's 7. And I was like, not everybody has the same level of mental health. Mm-hmm. And I said, some people are sick, in different ways. And some people have a really hard time functioning in society. And sometimes they get care, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. When they have that hard of a time, building relationships, then sometimes they wind up homeless. And it was a very short conversation. But it's like, hey, this problem is in our community. Mm-hmm. It's pervasive of just mental health. Now, there's obviously levels of that. I have to invest in my own mental health.
Yes.
Because I'm sure you may as well. Mm-hmm. But as far as that goes, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. I'll fill in, because I think where you're headed is, people see the picture of the person on the street corner, particularly in downtown. We know mm-hmm. that there's a high homeless population, and over 70% of those folks have a serious psychiatric illness and or a co-occurring substance use disorder. So I think when people think about mental illness, that's the picture they have in mind.
Yeah.
They have that image of someone who is not treated and is not living effectively. And you mentioned this, it's like there's a whole range, right? So we know that 1 in 5, we really say 1 in 4, we know since COVID the rates of depression and anxiety have gone up, but you know, that's the mental illness that most of us really relate to and understand is high levels of anxiety or depression, you know, mild depression, things that ourselves, our friends, our families all experience, right? And then there's this other extreme out here of someone who needs a high level of service. And we provide all of that. So I think sometimes people, you know, again, misunderstand this. This person that you're talking about is the only vision of mental illness, and it's not true. And the more we can kind of normalize that talk of, yeah, I have anxiety sometimes. Do you have anxiety sometimes?
Totally.
And it's a pretty normal conversation. And that's what we hope to do with our education and advocacy for mental health. It's really to hit all of those things.
Yeah. Would you be able to comment on maybe the differences between people of, because we're talking about normalizing.
Yeah.
But what's normal is we all have a brain.
Right.
What's not normal is if every brain were exactly the same.
Well, if every brain was exactly the same, it would be no problem to have perfect mental health, right? There's so many factors that go into what happens to that person on that very extreme things, end of things. And we call those social determinants of health, which is a great big word to say. What was your upbringing like when it came to access to food, access to education, access to healthcare, all of the things that I like to use the word driver versus determinant, because right. I think when you say determinant, it's sort of this end feeling, but we all know that there are things along the way that can help and change that. So what you see in psychiatric illness is you have a malfunctioning in the brain somewhere, right? Too much of a chemical, not enough of a chemical. And for the folks on the very severe end of that, they're experiencing things that on severe mental illness that are psychiatric symptoms like hallucinations, delusions, things that need medical intervention. So in that person, you know, walking and exercising, which are really good strategies, new health and nutrition, excellent strategies, are not going to be sufficient to stop the symptoms that they're having. And it's no different than someone with diabetes who's maybe, you know, again, think about diabetics. There's a real range of people who can control with their diet and exercise, and those that need ongoing intervention like injections or things like that. So we just really want to conceptualize mental illness in the same way and separate it from mental health, so we can talk about that too, because mental health is sort of the opposite end of what we want to talk about that on that end.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I see a therapist and a coach.
Good for you.
And honestly, the coach, I've been either quasi-entrepreneurial or entrepreneurial my entire career of being a financial advisor. Now I'm like full entrepreneurial, but what I'd always sought out, like, okay, I want a business coach.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I needed? I needed a coach who was trained as a coach, mm-hmm. somebody who understands how to like block and tackle.
Yeah.
And
a real coach.
Yeah, because I mean, the business coaching is great,
mm-hmm.
but I have made so much personal progress
mm-hmm.
in working with this person on just like, I don't want to go too deep on it, but like, just because, well, there's stigmas.
Okay? Sure, absolutely.
So as soon as I say, I figured out that I have ADHD when mm-hmm. I was working with her.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, what? I don't want an advisor who has ADHD. You know what? Probably most advisors probably have ADHD. I'm just going to say it. Like if you're in sales or mm-hmm. like you or an entrepreneur like that, that's just, it is, it's far more normal than you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, just trying to like bootstrap it and work harder
yeah.
and like make myself do stuff harder. And that's hard.
That's
like,
the story, though, that happens, right?
Yeah.
Is that people don't know they have something like ADHD or an illness, and they get through school and struggle to get there. We also know people with ADHD have higher rates of substance use disorders and other co-occurring because they don't feel right. They don't feel right in the classroom. They don't feel right in their peer groups. Many can be hugely successful because they've created all these what we call compensatory skills. So you've developed a lot of strategies to get by and make yourself real successful. But that proper diagnosis early, that will change someone's entire way of relating with the world.
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyways, like, and this is only going back a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. But that's it, is if you don't have an awareness or have put yourself around people mm-hmm. that can help you gain that awareness, then it's tough and it's harder than it probably needs to be. But that difference between like mental illness and mental health mm-hmm. is night and day, because I mean, I'm not mentally ill, right. But I'm learning more about, okay, here's how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. And then this is how I function. Like, I didn't know that your prefrontal lobe is just kind of like tired, mm-hmm. kinda, not droopy. Droopy is a bad word, but I don't like droopy, but,
it's just not getting all the activity it needs.
It's not woken up enough. Yeah. And that's really great when you are living in a cave and surviving and, mm-hmm. you know, bludgeoning your meal. But today that doesn't work so well when you're supposed to sit down and work at a computer, a desk mm-hmm. and get a bunch of stuff done. That's highly detailed, that doesn't directly translate to eating dinner.
Right. Yeah.
So, there's a shortage of therapists.
Right? Yes. Big shortage. If everyone's seen the report from Mental Health America that was published in 2023, Kansas is ranked 51 in incidence of mental illness without access. And the biggest point of access is not having enough clinical staff or clinicians, including med providers and therapists, to serve the needs of Kansas. Mm-hmm. Big shortage.
Yeah. How many more do we need?
Oh gosh. Offhand, I couldn't give you a specific number, but what I would say is the issue, I think, is many. One is we have some fantastic programs in the state of Kansas that develop great clinicians through lots of professions, counseling, marriage and family therapy, social work, psychology. And we're not doing a good job of retaining them and then getting them into the right spots. And part of that is funding. If the funding isn't there to pay people what they want, then they're going to find other places to go work. And so I think it's incumbent upon all of us across the state to figure out, if mental health is this priority, then let's put some money back there. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, for anyone who's seen the MHA Mental Health America report that came out this year, it talked about the lack of professionals across the nation in each state. Now, Kansas happened to rank 51, which is, you know, not a place to rank.
Wait, so
we are the worst.
We're like under Guam?
We are. It is. We hit 51. And that factor is in access to mental health care and higher rates of, particularly in our youth, who don't have access to treatment. So when you think about that, you're thinking, what do we need to do to solve the problem? And the thing that's amazing is across our state, we have incredible programs to develop great clinicians across all the disciplines, professional counseling, social work, psychology, marriage and family therapy. But we're not getting those folks to work in the highest needs of mental health, which is really the community mental health. Mm. That's where people are needed so that we can really hit people early with prevention and early intervention strategies, and then also work with the highest needs folks.
Gotcha. What's it going to take to do that?
I think a concerted effort. You know, there's not one single answer. I think that's people sometimes get disheartened with my grayness. Because there's no black and white answer to this particular issue. It has to do with all sorts of things. It has to do with education, early education. You know, we don't really talk about mental health as a career track for kids. You know, if you think about in high schools now, they have programs where people can start nursing. They have programs where people can start STEM. But we're not talking about careers in mental health. So that's a strategy. We need reimbursement rates from the insurance side to actually match what's an equitable wage for someone,
right.
You know, and that's a really complex issue. I think about like our psychiatrists, they're medical doctors, very needed expertise when you're treating with severe mental illness. And they don't even have the same type of payment parity as a doctor on the medical side.
Right.
And yet they're doing this specialized expertise service. So that's an example.
Yeah. It takes how many years of schooling to
be? It'll be eight. Yeah. You know, and then depending on what they decide to do in terms of other fellowships or rotations. So
an average pay is like 100 and something.
Yeah.
In context, an MD would be double that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so we're asking, you know, your very broad brush of an industry of mental mm-hmm. health to shoulder the needs of the community, financially yeah. speaking.
Right.
Because reimbursement rates stink.
Yeah, they stink. And everybody, what's interesting is everybody's impacted by mental health. I mean, we know that, you know, depression as an example, the illness with the highest rates of lost work time and production. Yeah. So all of us have that, right? We have people that work for us that struggle with depression, and so they have more sick days, or they have more days of presenteeism versus absenteeism. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes a really snowball effect, because we don't have the right access and the right support and really the right acknowledgement for people when they're having a mental health struggle.
Yeah.
Mental health in the workplace is something that we're really passionate about. Clearly that makes sense, but we have something called the Bell Seal Certification for Mental Health America. We were platinum winners this year. I'm really excited about that. But really what that means is we're prioritizing the mental health of our employees. So, you know, instead of someone, I tell my staff, it's like, instead of calling in and saying, oh, I have a migraine today, or, oh, I ate some bad shrimp, I can call in and say, you know what, today's a really rough day, and I'm having yeah. a ton of anxiety, and I just can't come in today. That honesty is what shifts stigma. And when it's accepted just as well as someone saying, oh, I'm sick and I, you know, have a headache, you know, I'm having high anxiety and I can't come to work today. I want people to feel like it's safe to do.
Right. Yeah. Man.
Normalizing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, normalizing is really key, because when we take a hide it, shame approach,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still questioning right now. It's like, was that poor impulse control that I decided to go there?
See, don't analyze it. Just go with it.
Or
you're getting to something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's like, hey, this is the normalizing of, like,
it is.
We're all people with mm-hmm. our own brains, and we got to get comfortable with that, because otherwise it's like, okay, I think there's the stigma is really, I think, kind of another word for just shame.
Mm-hmm.
In general,
right,
when it applies to this. And it's like, we don't have to be shameful for how we're wired or how we're made, and
mm-hmm.
there's very good reasons that we wound up the way that we are.
Yes.
Or we've grown the way that we are, and if we aren't going to have the space to look at that and really think through that and figure out, hey, is there healing here
mm-hmm.
that needs to happen? Is this an open wound that is just wreaking havoc on my life,
mm-hmm.
whether it's obvious or not, or quality of life,
mm-hmm.
or you know, do I need to go talk to a doctor
mm-hmm.
and get a medication?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but without being able to just kind of set the stigma, the shame aside of, you know, let's take a look at that. That's really hard to take a look mm-hmm. at it, and reduces the chances that somebody's actually going to seek the care that they have been needing the whole time.
Absolutely. And we know this with the youth now. They gravitate towards peer groups or online platforms to talk and share their feelings, but they don't go to their parents. And so, you know, that's something we want kids to understand. Hey, I can share this with my parents, or if it's not safe, I can share it with someone who gets it to the right place. And also educate parents that if you see a dramatic change in your child's behavior, talk about it. You know, one of the things I think parents worry so much about is, if I talk about it, then they'll do it, or they'll think it, or I'm creating something. And that's just miseducation. It goes right along with that stigma that we talk about. So, you know, I don't know how many of your kids would feel bad saying, hey, Dad, my throat hurts this morning. Probably not any of them would worry about that, except maybe you're going to make them go to school anyway or something. I don't know. But kids don't have the language or the understanding to say, you know, I feel sad today, you know, and that's a shift. When mm-hmm. we can get to that place, that's a shift.
Usually, yeah. I mean, from my three, it looks like they're acting out. They're upset. They're, mm-hmm. you know, correcting the other one or two. They're, mm-hmm. you know, throwing a lion fit. I mean, rather than I'm sad.
Yeah. Those are harder things to understand. And it certainly at their ages, they may not have the language to say those things, but that's where parents, and if we can step in, give language, ask questions, be curious, then we can open up some dialogue. My kids would jokingly, when they were little, say, okay, mom, let's go take it to the couch. Now, right now, they're the therapist kids. So, you know, they say things like that.
Oh, that's good. That's funny. Is that, did you tell them? Did you start that?
I did
you
say, not
Let's
actually.
Take it to the couch.
I didn't, which is really funny in and of itself.
That is funny. Let's take it to the couch.
Let's take it to the couch.
What went through your mind the first time you heard one of them say that?
Man, don't get me started about my kids, because I'm a proud mom and always will be. And, you know, I think I have the best children. But what it reminded me of is I'm doing something right. So, you know, here, moment of vulnerability. I think mm-hmm. when I was brought up, I didn't feel that connection to talk with my parents openly. And one of the primary things I always said to myself when I had kids is I want them to be able to talk to me about anything, mm-hmm. anything. Nothing is off table. And I think I've done that. I think I've created an environment where my kids feel comfortable talking about anything, from big world issues to, you know, small things that are happening in their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, nice. I think I tend to accomplish the take it to the couch when they're stuck in the back seat and we're driving somewhere. But I actually like that phrase mm-hmm. as far as just like to give them something mm-hmm. to say, of like, if they want to talk about something, they can say that. It's just like a free zone of like, hey, whatever it is.
Safe zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So this feels like a good, I do want to touch on one more thing before we just jump into the lifestyle and mm-hmm. the lessons learned portion.
Sure.
I feel very under-equipped to go help somebody having a conversation with thin air. Mm-hmm. What can someone like me, who's not a mental health professional, do to help with mental health, mental illness, get involved and help meet the huge need?
Yeah, great question. I'm going to start with a very individual answer, which is one of the trainings we provide to the community is a suicide intervention training called QPR, Question Persuade Refer. And what it does is it really gives people like you who don't have the clinical background the language to say, hey, I noticed you aren't doing well today. Are you having thoughts of suicide? I'm just listening to that. When I say, are you having thoughts of suicide? Lots of people immediately get activated and think, I could never say that to someone.
Seriously?
Yeah. And what we want people to understand is when you do that, you create a dialogue. And someone has the opportunity to say, yeah, I'm not doing well today. I'm not thinking about suicide, but I'm not doing well today. And mm-hmm. then there's a dialogue. So for anyone, non-clinical or whatever, whoever you are, you can be human. Mm-hmm. You can be human and notice when people aren't doing well and talk to them. That's one of the key elements we know when it comes to suicide intervention and prevention, is many people who have survived an attempt say, I just wanted someone to reach out. And if someone had reached out, I wouldn't have done this or that. So anyone, regardless of who you are, can take those trainings and get comfortable with saying that. We even tell people, like, say it over to yourself. Say it to your friends. Are you having thoughts of suicide? Because the words come out tough the first time.
Yep.
Yeah, right. You're like, yeah, it's tough.
Okay, so at one point I did have a friend who called and was not doing well.
Yeah.
Even knowing that that's kind of where the conversation was headed, mm-hmm. or rather was that they were in a very dark place.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could have been the, like, felt comfortable initiating that actual question.
Right.
But it started off with texts, and I was like, okay. And then I didn't know what to do. And thankfully at the time I knew a marriage and family therapist, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. and now I know Stephanie. We're married.
Right.
but at the time I was like, what do I do? Like, what do I do with this? And cause I didn't feel I felt like if I say we should call the suicide hotline together or something, that's going to make it worse. And it's cause like, I'm like, I don't want to pile on shame or like blame or anything like that. But that's what wound up happening. And they got help and, you know, still a tough situation. There makes perfect sense why that person was not in a good place. That person doesn't have the support they need. They don't have the network. They don't have the resources. Anyways, it's a tough situation, but that was really tough for me to do that, even though that was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And that all worked out well. But man, it's like, I don't think most people are probably comfortable asking that point of a question or bringing that up if they see somebody's like really down.
Yeah. That's exactly why we want people to get comfortable with it. When I hear that story you just shared, I think about how difficult it was for your friend to reach out to in the first place and say, I'm not doing well. And then for you to recognize this is darker than you were expecting. And the exact right thing happened, because now we have 988 hotline. People can call or text on that national hotline, and they'll be connected to local resources, not national resources. But it's a way to say, there's an out for this that isn't suicide. There is help. And again, what we know about the research around that, when people are feeling that way, they're waiting for that kind of one thing that'll say, okay, I have a life worth living. And we want people to feel equipped to recognize that and say, I can help you. You may not know what to do, A, B, C, D, but you knew enough to, okay, let's get on the hotline together. Mm-hmm. And that's incredible. That's what saves lives.
Yeah. And I'll probably go check back in actually now that I think about it. But so how can people get involved?
Yeah. So that was my spiel for how people can help anybody. Okay. In our organization, there's lots of ways people can get involved. You can volunteer time, you can volunteer resources, you can volunteer expertise. We have a lot of people, board members, advisory members who just lend maybe their financial expertise to our organization, or one of our programs is a volunteer program with kids at school over their lunchtime. And a lot of people like that. It's called Lunch Buddies, where they can be matched with a student and they go eat lunch with them. And a lot of our kids don't have those proper mentors in their lives, or people who can really be that solid place to look up to. And so that's a really neat way to get involved. But I always say there's 100 ways for people to get involved. It's like, where did your talent want to plug in? And there'll be an opportunity to get you doing something with our organization.
So one of the reasons the MHA has a special place in my heart is because growing up, I didn't have a lot of fears. I was pretty fearless, young and dumb, and did things. On the outside, I looked like a nice, responsible kid. I still did. I had three brothers. And I guess I can say this now, but we had too much time between when school got out and when our parents got home to do whatever we did, wreak havoc, and then, you know, get all put back together. You know,
yes.
That's not story time for that. But my greatest, so there's a lot of stuff I had no fear about that I should have had greater fears about. But one of the things I was afraid of is, I know we don't use the word crazy, but I was afraid of going crazy because I think it's like 1% of men by like the age of 26 have severe mental illness. Mm-hmm. That was my greatest fear, being a prisoner to my own body. Mm. So I'm like, whatever, I hope people get involved.
Yeah. And to your point, most major mental illnesses develop by the age of 14. And so we can definitely see why early screening and having more school-based services and intervention programs are important, because the earlier you intervene, the better outcome you have. That's just facts.
Yeah. And if it was, is that statistic in the ballpark at all?
Yeah, that for severe psychiatric illness, yes.
Okay.
It's a really small part of the population that have major psychiatric illness like schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder.
But the sneaky part was all the other stuff where mental health was subpar. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it because it was normal to me.
Yeah.
And I think, so anyways, my encouragement for living the best life possible, at least from my side of the table, is go spend serious time, multiple sessions with a therapist, just for the heck of it. Mm-hmm. You know, not because you think you need to. Go do that.
Yeah, find ways in which you're not tapping into all your resources that you have available, or just understanding yourself better. You know, some people use therapy to determine, like, what are the real desires I have? What are the wants I have out of life? What are the things that I'm lacking that I really want to explore? And therapy is really good for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not a therapist, but what I have found is talking about behavioral finance, mm-hmm. and what is connected to money is behavior. Mm-hmm. And if I don't, you know, address behavior with clients, then I could be, there's a lot of turn of phrases, but wasting, you know, like spinning my wheels. Mm-hmm. And maybe they are too, but like there's a lot, the behavioral finance is really key, mm-hmm. on like getting clear on what's important to us and getting down to like, what do we really care about? Mm-hmm. And aligning what we're doing with our finances, with our life, with our time, what are we sowing into, and what do we expect to reap from that? And is that what we want to get? But so there's, and then, but also just the mental health, mm-hmm. is very entwined with finances as well.
Well, think about it. I mean, what you're saying is how I choose to spend my money. It can be driven by the status of my health, right? Mm-hmm. And that's mental health or physical health.
Absolutely.
So if you think about that interplay, that makes perfect sense. And when I have clients who say they have money issues, I look at them and say, it's likely not a money issue, at least not in the way you think, right?
Sure.
And that's part of making good choices. You know, there's real financial hardships, and I won't ever discount that for someone, but a lot of times it's where you choose to put your efforts and the decisions you're making, and whether or not, like you said, they're supporting those goals that you have in mind.
Yep. So that might be a good segue to transfer over to, let's talk about what does living the best life possible look like for Mary?
Yeah, great question. Family is really key to me. I do a lot of things professionally, and I love every bit of it, and I wouldn't spend time in professional activities that didn't just fill me up and bring me joy. But for people who know me, they're going to hear the term boundaries and know that Mary said that, because it's a really important term to me. When I'm with my family, I am 100% with my family. Mm-hmm. When I'm at work, I am at work. And I think that's an effective strategy for me to make sure that, you know, when I walk in the door and I talk to my kids and I talk to my husband, that's the best part of my day. That's the piece I want to just take in every moment, no matter what's being said or what's happened on the day for them. So that's really important. Living my best life is about really engaging and being present when I'm at either of those things. And then it's finding the things that bring me the most joy. Reading a book, taking a hike, swimming. And we love to be active, swimming, walking, just being in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. Mental Health America's campaign this year for Mental Health Month was look around and look within. And a lot of that was about your geography and your location and being part of nature, and how much we get from being outside and looking at trees and listening to birds and hearing water. And when we engage our senses in those, they can really have a physical response to how our stress and anxiety is responding.
Right. So I need more green stuff around the office.
You need more green stuff. You have kind of green carpet. I don't know if that works.
I don't think that.
It's not the same.
I don't know
same.
If that counts. But I do need more green stuff.
I see an apple over there. That's good.
I do have an apple. Yeah. That's the backup.
Apple a day.
That's the backup, like, lunch. If
yes.
Anyways.
I understand.
Right. It's not decoration. Anyways.
More green.
More green. More green. I need more green around here. Yeah, it's that's good. That's good. I need more green. But so that was the focus. You talked about the importance and the presence of relationships.
Yes.
Would you mind sharing more about the role of relationships in depth and quality in mental health?
Yeah. In mental health in particular, or how it impacts our mental health? Our mental health? Impact. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for anyone, whether or not it's a romantic relationship or a friendship, having a deep connection with someone is really critical to how you function in the world. And, you know, for me, my best friend is my husband, and we have, I think, a very deep relationship. We've been married almost 23 years, and, you know, we're kind of each other's rock. And being able to have that place where you can share all the vulnerabilities and then celebrate all the joys. And for us, that relationship looks like a lot of humor. We're kind of humor-driven people, but still able to be serious when we need to. I think that's paramount to people. So a friendship, a connection with someone, a trusted person, that's just, we know a lot in research now about the impacts of isolation.
Yep.
And the lack of connectedness. And even though in the world we look like we're so connected through social media, we are lonely. And
hey, speaking of
connection,
your innermost circle of yes. connections.
I'm going to leave my phone outside. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. He's in the room with us.
He's in the room with us. This will be my son, because my husband set our rings so they can break through a do not disturb, you know, which is a good thing sure. often, but when you're on a podcast, it can be disrupting.
That's okay. It's a human.
It's a human.
And another human.
Yes.
And there's another human now.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the podcast.
Yeah.
He'd be like, you know, you're on a podcast.
He would love that, actually. He would love to be on a podcast.
Then you can go listen to it and see where it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the damage that we do to ourselves when we isolate, and it may not be intentionally, but when we don't have margin built into our life, we're working our butts off and running around all the activities. I think back to when, this was about 2010, I was talking with a guy named Vinny Gerace, and he's not licensed anything psychologically, but he's very gifted when it comes to understanding what makes not I okay. I was gonna say it makes people tick, but really are the basics, the foundations of our personality and how that interplays with other people. Mm-hmm. But basically, really, I was like, I have a lot of friends, and I think now that I've grown emotionally since then, I would tell someone. I have like this many friends,
right?
Like close friends and really close. So there's a big difference. I've noticed a big difference for myself in having those quality relationships with frequency of real interaction, vulnerable interaction. And if you don't have a friend that you're really vulnerable with and just able to be yourself and have a conversation about, you know, what's important to each other and dissect it and ask questions and encourage and build up each other. And like, you're missing out.
Yeah. You need that genuineness with someone. That's what the deep connection is, what makes people really understand themselves better and be healthier.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Kurt Thompson, It's like, it doesn't, okay, now I'm really going off the rails.
Go for it.
The relational communities that he's, works that he's done, it's like he's intentionally picking out people that don't know each other, that have no connection as best as they can filter it, which is hard to do.
Right.
In any city. I mean, for example, I was out on the golf course at the 17th hole and I ran into Eric and I was like, hey, I'd love to interview the head of MHA and have her on a podcast. And then you have a connection with my wife.
Right. Right. Small world.
And I was like, so this one thing, and you're like, oh my gosh, I just connected.
Yeah, Took me a minute, but I got it.
But it's hard to separate those out. But okay, so he does as best as he can, period, mm-hmm. to keep people, like, to get people that aren't connected. And the working out of that in the room is revealing to the people themselves of, like, this is the real work of, like, mm-hmm. the really inner thoughts. And, like, you know, it's crazy. It's such cool. It's such a cool mm-hmm. thing that he's done. And, but even doing that, it's like, you can't keep relationship out of the room.
No.
It's crazy.
Once you are connected with someone, you are in, if I were teaching, I'd say you're in the system with that person. You can't not be part of their world.
Right.
And, you know, as I approach what I do in my life and who I spend time with, from students to staff to my colleagues to my friends, it's understanding the importance of that, that I want to have a connection with someone regardless of what that looks like or how time limited it is. I want it to be genuine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, man, this is like, I need to shut up. So,
it's your show.
Well... You're the guest. So let's, I was going to talk about lie to me because I didn't used to speak the language of body language. Mm-hmm. And you ever watched the show Lie to Me?
I haven't.
Oh my gosh. You have to watch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I watched it. It'll be on my to-do list.
Go find it. It's probably streaming on like Hulu or mm-hmm. something, but go find it.
Okay.
Watch the first 5 minutes mm-hmm. and then decide.
Okay.
You'll probably be hooked, but
okay.
It was amazing. Changed my life.
Always like new shows.
Yep. Okay. So relationships, that's mm-hmm. the primary. And then, well, I don't necessarily say secondary, but okay. Secondarily, being outside, outdoors, connected.
Mm-hmm.
And that does it for you. Those two things.
And sleep. I have to tell you, I'm a person that needs sleep, requires sleep. People don't get enough sleep and they don't prioritize sleep. And it's really critical because that's how your brain heals. It's where you get your recovery for the day. And so, you know, that is something that's important to me. And I keep pretty good boundaries around sleep. I think it's important. I need to function on about for sure 7 hours of sleep, but okay. 7 to 8. It's important that people prioritize that as a health strategy.
Nice. I usually ask about life hacks, like if you come across anything special in life. That sounds like one.
It is. I mean, I think people underestimate the value of sleep. And here's some things it does. I mean, it really changes your brain chemistry if you're tired. So you do things like you have worse judgment the next day when you're tired. You may eat things you didn't want to eat. You may drink things you didn't want to drink. You may make poor decisions that you wouldn't have done had you had good sleep. So we have to really think about it from the standpoint of a health practice. So yeah, that's a life hack for sure.
Okay. My life hack would have been go watch Lie to Me.
Okay. Well, it could be mine. I just don't know yet.
Maybe someday it will be. I don't know.
It could be.
Yeah. Are there anything else in your life that you've figured out that's like, man, this has been invaluable ever since I started doing this?
You know what? This is, it is going to sound strange or maybe cliche to people, but I never really got too stressed out about my kids. And it was because I just always kept this perspective of like, I'm not going to have this moment again. And even if it was one of those awful tantrums when they were little or some of the hardest moments that you go through as they're getting through teenage and then early 20s, it's like, I have to be mindful that this stage that's happening or this thing that's happening, if I'm present with it, I won't experience it again. And so I think that approach to me has given me sort of the, I don't know, just the insight of really appreciating whatever it is that we're in mm-hmm. at the moment. And I think that's a hard practice for people, but I try my best.
Ironically, it sounds like you actually kind of remove yourself from the situation of whatever breakdown might be occurring.
And sometimes they are.
Just enough to like get your bearings and like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, from a silly standpoint, I think about parents who maybe stress out that their kids have worn the same outfit for, you know, 3 weeks or something like that. And I'm like, you know, kids have very little opportunity for control. So who does it matter to if someone's wearing the same, you know, pair of pants for 3 weeks?
Yeah, and then your own kid gets reported.
That's right. It's for personal choice. No, I'm being a little bit flippant and silly about that, but it's like, I just, things that we stress ourselves out about mm-hmm. are so unnecessary in the grand scheme of life, right? And that's what we're here to do. We're here to enjoy the ride that we're on. Mm-hmm. For me, it's engaging with the world around me and, you know, being the best I can be at what I think my talents are.
Okay. So you have three kids. Mm-hmm. You've managed to navigate the gauntlet of
yes.
all that comes with that.
Yeah. And not an expert, by the way. just a parent.
Well, look, if your kids grow up pretty flawlessly, mm-hmm. then you're supposed to write a book about how you did it.
That's what my husband says. I'm supposed to write a book.
Okay, that's a high compliment. Mm-hmm. But what would be practical advice for parents that have kids mm-hmm. that have all the world of opportunities of activities to do mm-hmm. with multiple kids, mm-hmm. mind you, every season of the year? Mm-hmm. What do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, the word boundaries is going to come back up for me again. Again, people who know me will be laughing at that if they're listening to this. We have a drive to be part of everything. You know, people say FOMO now, right? The fear of missing out is what drives a lot of people. And instead of finding out what thing does my kid really enjoy, which activity is bringing joy to them and joy to us and our family, mm-hmm. then pour into that and kind of reduce that need to be part of everything that happens. And that's going to be an individual choice, but I just see it time and time again where the parents run themselves ragged, kids are running themselves ragged and sort of driving to a performance standard that isn't maintainable. And there'll be crash and burns. And so we don't want people to do that. We want people to enjoy the activities that they want to engage in so they have good memories and their positive experiences.
What does rest look like as a family?
Oh, we can be pretty chill. So in our family, it is people get their alone time as much as together time. We like time away, like in hiking in the mountains, spending that kind of time together. Every family has, you know, their own unique rhythm. And I think sometimes we don't allow space for each person to have a rhythm while the whole group has a rhythm too. And so find where in your family or whoever's family and whoever's listening, what does that rhythm look like? And can we allow space for people to be individuals while still owning us together as a group that belongs together?
Nice. Okay. So rhythm together.
Rhythm together.
All right.
Yeah. Like and allow it. Space. Allow space. Right.
And people have their alone time.
Yes.
Even mom and dad.
Even mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mom and dad as a system, and then each partner by themselves, because everybody needs some downtime.
Absolutely. Or it happens in the context of everybody else.
Yes.
Then they go down.
Right. Right.
They crash and burn, mm-hmm. as you said. Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's see. So what would be valuable wisdom that you would impart onto people working on living the best life possible with the time we have left, mm-hmm. whether it relates to finances or not, mm-hmm. or financial decision-making? I of course wouldn't ask you how you and your husband navigate financial decision-making, but, mm-hmm. But if you had any wisdom or advice on what works well.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to throw an example. This is not
sure.
me.
Okay.
Not
me. All right.
A major purchase. Mm-hmm. One spouse wants it. The other one doesn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying several thousand dollars.
Yeah.
Okay. What would that look like to navigate a decision like that?
Well, again, I think it's about compromise and talking and finding out what the value is beyond the dollar to that purchase. You know, I think a lot of us live our lives around how much something costs, mm-hmm. or, you know, what the bank account number is saying. And I think sometimes we undervalue, well, this big purchase is not just about finances. It's about a value or an aspiration or something I've always wanted to do, have, et cetera. Yeah. And we don't take the time to have those conversations. It's just like, it's a dollar and it's not a dollar. my wisdom on it is life is really short. You know, the older you get, you recognize life is short. We have a small amount of time here in the grand scheme of things. So find joy in that. For people who don't like their jobs, find a job you love. If, you know, you're unsatisfied with where you're living, find another place to live. And I'm not saying this like it's simple, but it's we don't sometimes take all the control that we actually have to make big changes in our life. And I recognize that really small changes make big changes. So,
yep. Yeah. Cause sometimes that big ticket item, is kind of the obvious and apparent and in your face way to satisfy that need or desire that maybe is not fully clarified. Mm-hmm. And when I heard you say that, I heard curiosity of your spouse and really coming together. And also, how can we lay down for our spouse our own stuff and say, okay, I want to meet you where you're at. Mm-hmm. Maybe I suspect that that's not the thing.
Yeah, it's not the thing. It's usually not the thing.
Yeah. But like, yeah. And that's what I think is so. But that curiosity, that talking is so key. And but that plays in to so much being healthy as a couple.
Yes.
And, you know, 70% of divorces boil down to, well, okay, I think it's a misnomer.
I'm with you on this.
But it's financially connected.
Yes.
But
most certainly.
But the finances, I think, are where a lot of the emotional stuff can play out in a more in-your-face way.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm not a person that says your financial picture with your partner has to look in an exact same way. Mm-hmm. You know, we set up something in our system, in our household early on that works really great for us. And, you know, that's how we've operated since then. But I don't think people have those conversations either. And so we just have this idea of, well, we're married, so it's ours, you know, and don't really have any conversations about what are our goals? What are our values? How do we want our life to look? Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because like getting married, you become one. Mm-hmm. But to the level that somebody doesn't feel safe or isn't willing to become one, that's where it stops.
Right.
And it takes both. So, even in finances, mental health, whatever that is, it's helpful to be curious about your spouse, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. And helpful to be vulnerable when it is safe, right?
And vulnerable when it is safe. Mm-hmm. Safe, secure, seen, and soothed. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, good. Mary, does MHA have a podcast or anything like that?
We don't, but this is giving me all sorts of ideas.
You can go like ask
You can people. Find us on, you can find a lot of our stuff on YouTube, though. We do have a YouTube channel. And
okay.
We're on all the social media stuff.
What's the YouTube channel?
Oh, my gosh. You can't ask me that.
Is it a crazy string of letters and numbers?
Probably.
Okay.
Much like our name, yes.
How would I find it?
You could just search Mental Health Association of South Central Kansas, and you'll find it.
There's probably not too many of those, huh?
No. I think there's one.
Good. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'll give you one last opportunity to share something. Has there been, as you've been growing MHA, is there maybe just like a strong leadership lesson you learned while you were at the helm or as you were coming up through the ranks that has been transformational?
I think for me, it comes back to genuineness. I can't lead without people around me. Right. So I find that the most inspirational thing is pay attention to the people around you who are feeding into you, but you don't really even know they're feeding into you. And yeah. It's every interaction I have with someone where I can take something away and go, "Now that felt something. I felt something there." So as I've had opportunity to grow and develop into different roles and into where I am now, that's how I see my role, is tapping into the resources of the people.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. You are one of 170.
I am. Absolutely.
It's amazing. Well, thank you so much for serving our community and our area and our state, and sharing some of your time today. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can multiply this out there and sow a little bit for you and
great.
And reap some help from the community.
Thanks. That's awesome. Thank you for having us.
All right. Well, Mary, invaluable. Thank you. And go buy some tickets.
Yes.
You know, to the gala.
Yes.
Over at Mark Arts.
Yes.
If, you know, wherever it is.
It is Mark Arts.
In years moving forward beyond 2023.
It may have to.
So this will sign us off. This has been the Real Wealth Podcast. So we are here to help live the best life possible with the time you have left, make wise financial decisions, and is sponsored by Leading Edge Financial Planning.